Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Don't miss a second of the action as the Preds face the Arizona Coyotes in Game 4 today. Watch party viewing destinations include Burger Republic and Party Foul. Stop by Burger Republic in Lenox Village or Mount Juliet and enjoy the Force Burger for a limited time and $4 Happen Harry's Pints. Party Foul locations are at the Cool Springs Galleria in Franklin, in Murfreesboro off Broad Street, in Donelson off of Lebanon Pike, and downtown in the Gulch. Wear your Preds gold and bring the noise to root on the Preds. Puck drop at 1:30. 102.5 The Game will be at Party Foul in the Gulch and the Burger Republic in Mount Juliet from noon until the end of the game. So make sure you stop by and pick up some game and Preds swag. And with that, my friends, it's now time to bring in Teron Davenport.
Baby, don't have to ask. Don't ask no questions.
Teron Davenport, ladies and gentlemen. And TD, before we get rolling here, I hear you have a connection to the artist we're hearing right now. What's going on, man?
Yeah, that's right, man. I appreciate you guys playing at Marquise and making that happen. That's my daughter, man, my 21-year-old. And, you know, since we've been in Nashville, she's been working with some of the local artists, and this is another one of the songs she brought out. So
that's your daughter singing?
I appreciate that.
That's your daughter
singing?
That's her. Holy crap.
That was her singing, yeah. Yeah, she got a little voice on her, man.
Now, did she get that musical talent from you, TD? Is this you doing this?
Nah, man. I mean, you hear me right now. I sound like Teddy Pendergrass. version of it. You know what I mean? So, nah, she didn't get it from me.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being a little Teddy P, though. But, man, that is really impressive. Okay, so what's her name? I need to follow her on Twitter and hear more of this.
Yeah, her name, she doesn't really do much on Twitter, but she has a SoundCloud. She calls herself The Godfly. So it's D-A-G-A-D-F-L-Y. You could check her out on SoundCloud. And she has a few pages on Instagram also.
Sounds good. I'm all for it.
That's fantastic. I've talked about getting on Instagram, you know. Everybody's on Instagram now.
You need to get there, Joe.
I know.
People would love to see your beautiful face on Instagram. There's no question about it.
That's impressive stuff, TD.
Yeah, she shocked me. Yeah, when she was younger, we went up to New York. This was maybe 5 years ago. We went up to New York for either America's Got Talent or it was one of those shows like that. And we're sitting in the room, and everyone else is doing the Do-re-mi and all that stuff, working on their voice, and she's just sitting there. I'm like, Deja, are you going to practice? And she's like, no, we're good. And when we went in there, she sang one of Rihanna's songs, and one of the judges started crying. She liked it so much. She made it to the next round, but her issue was she was a lot more shy back then, so she didn't have that stage presence, so she didn't advance too much further. But yeah, I was proud of her.
Absolutely.
Wow,
that's awesome. Teron Davenport on the line with us, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. So TD, obviously, Vic Beasley, we talked about it last week with you. Now it's developed since then that the opt-out deadline has come and gone, and he still has not even opted out and not shown up. How in the world do you begin to describe what in the world's going on with Vic Beasley here in the Titans?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is disappointing. And here's my thing, right? You had these things coming out from Atlanta about work ethic, about dedication to the game, And for me, when I look at what Mike Vrabel and John Robinson and the folks there at St. Thomas Sports Park, they have repetitively said, we're giving them a clean slate. And you give a man a clean slate and you take and have all of these side virtual conversations with him because he's not as comfortable in the group setting, and because you want to focus in on getting him up to speed, and the way you get rewarded is no call, no show for a couple of days, and then you call, and then you don't show for a bunch more days. So for me, it's just all disappointing. I think that's the way you have to explain it. But also, you have to try to, you know, develop understanding too. Okay, what is it that's keeping this man from coming? Why is it that, you know, you have this bizarre behavior? I think that's really important to look at, you know, where are you as far as from a mental standpoint? And, you know, you have to hope that everything is okay from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the situation we've been, TD, for about 10 days now, really of just being left to speculate. And early on, we were talking about this earlier on the show, like early it was like, man, is Vic Beasley okay? You got to think about that.
Yeah.
And then there was a Chattanooga reporter said, you know, he had a family wedding. You know, we go through more and more days and this – and I kind of thought, okay, he's probably just debating about opting out, and he'll probably opt out. That's not the case. So I've already jumped to the battle over money that may come, and in my mind, I think it's really hard. It's going to be hard if he changes his mind, you know, for him to come in and have a lot of trust. Now, obviously, you come in, you say sorry you didn't call, you work hard, and you can make up for that. But I guess I'm – to the point, TD, where I just don't see how that's very likely at all. Let's say my speculation there is correct. How do you see the money thing playing out here? Obviously, the Titans now have that $6 million counting against the cap this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be charged to the cap this year. And I guess, you know, it's just – it's crazy. So basically what they could do is go after him to recoup some of that if he decides not to show up. In the meantime, and that's at all, but if he decides to continue holding out, you know, not reporting, then he's going to continue to accumulate that $50,000 per day fine. I just think if he does show up, the trust has been breached, and that's something that's going to be hard to recover. Think about if you were a guy in that locker room. Think about if you're, I don't know, random guy, Kenny Vaccaro. Think about if you're Kenny Vaccaro, right? And you saw what it was like to come in late and try to, you know, fast forward your relationship with the guys, and then you benefited from being with them for a full year and having that opportunity. You look at this and you're going to be like, yo, what's up? You know, and I think that's the thing that really is going to be tough, is just him within that locker room. And for what I understand, he's not the most social person, you know, from what I've been told. So you're already starting at a disadvantage, and now you made it even worse.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us. And, Teron, I'm just going to throw the worst-case scenario at you. Let's just say Vic Beasley either doesn't show up, it doesn't work out, whatever the case may be, and the Titans are not able to land Jadeveon Clowney. What do you do there if you're the Titans from a pass-rushing perspective?
Yeah, that's a tough situation. I think you could look to a guy like Everson Griffin, who's still out there, you know. But other than that, you just have to really scheme up opportunities to rush the passer. And you got to really hope that your secondary, you know, could help the front end with their coverage, you know what I mean, that will allow the front end to have more time to get to the quarterback. I think if neither of those situations work out, Vic Beasley or Jadeveon Clowney, a guy like Derek Roberson, his role and part of the team just is amplified. I think, you know, Correa, his opportunity to improve upon that 5 sacks he had last year is pushed up, and it's not a good situation for them, though, because, you know, you look at all the sacks that they lost, all the pressures that they lost, and just the ability to impact the quarterback by way of Jarrell Casey and Logan Ryan. you didn't make up for that. So I think, you know, if Beasley and Clowney aren't around, then it's going to be tough sledding for that defense.
Well, yeah, I was actually just going to bring up Casey, because that's another thing here is part of the picture is, you know, getting more on the edge, which they did in signing Beasley, but obviously you traded Casey away. You know, I guess you could say a year early, you dumped the salary, and now, man, to me, Jarrell Casey could help a lot, because if with Casey and Simmons, you could get more interior rush to help everyone else. And obviously the Titans have high hope for Simmons, and he may be dominant this year. But, like, the whole picture of it, TD, is right now, it's unless there's a surprise, I guess, it's not good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's not good enough right now. But the good thing for Titans fans and the good thing for the Titans themselves is, you know, scheme can help that. Of course, I feel players supersede scheme, but you can put guys in more likely situations to be able to make those plays. But, yeah, it's a very murky situation right now.
Okay, so we got to – so go to Clowney again right now. Some people have wondered, you know, why is he waiting and all that. And to me, like, this is exactly why. Because someone out there is going to be in a situation where they're more desperate for you. So do you see this as a situation where the Titans will now adjust what they're willing to give him? And I guess, do you think that he ends up closer to, you know, the high teens, close to $20 million range for a one-year deal?
I think they absolutely need to adjust what they are willing to give, just because of the fact that they need to make sure that they get him in the building. And I think it will definitely push him closer to that high teen. I mean, I could see a $15 million, you know, dollar for 1 year. I could see something like that being orchestrated, you know, because you basically have to. And it's so interesting how the game of leverage has shifted. You know, just 2 weeks ago, everyone's saying, well, you know, if Clowney gets $15 million, he'll be very, very fortunate. You know, they were saying it was 10 to 12 is probably where he's going to land. And now look what happened. So he's playing the game pretty wisely. But, you know, at some point you do got to get into that camp, and you do have to, you know, get acclimated to the new franchise that you're joining. But again, fortunately for him, he's familiar with so much with the Titans coaching staff.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Also, just part of an incredibly talented family, apparently. I mean, this is just unbelievable here. TD, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it, man.
No problem, man. Thank you, guys. Take it easy.
Absolutely. Thanks, you too.
I want to hear more.
I know. Like,
this should be bump music.
That was really good.
It should be every bump music. Munson?
Get on,
he's over
Munson.
There. He's over there on
he's
the board.
He's working on other
he's
things.
He's working furiously on the board. That's good stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was hoping Teron gets a feature at least. You know, he gets a 16 bars that he can write up. I'm pretty sure TD can go back to the 90s, you know, rap a few bars here and there. I'm pretty sure he can.
Yeah,
he's underestimating his skill set.
Do we think TD was being kind of modest there in terms of not taking credit for musical talent in his family?
Well, I mean, he said Teddy Pendergrass. Teddy Pendergrass is some good stuff.
Yeah, man.
Actually, honestly, I think we need some Teddy Pendergrass bump music now before the end of the show. Before we get to the weekend, we need some Teddy P.
When we come back, there is a feud in college football brewing, and you won't believe who it's between. Spoiler alert, Ohio State and Michigan. That's next. We'll react to it. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson. Munson's loving this one.
Great video.
That's good.
Great video in around 1992. Onyx.
What a great year, 92.
I've been listening 92. To Teddy Pendergrass songs, by the way.
Oh, I got one.
For Bump. You got one? Because the problem is it takes a long time. All of his songs have these long intros
into that deep voice.
You got to hear the deep voice.
Joe, you got to let the love build.
Yeah.
Got to let the love build, baby.
I get
gotta
that.
Got to let it marinate.
Right, but for Bump music, that's not ideal.
Yeah, it's not.
But, yeah, that's the challenge. That's the challenge you're faced with. You got one, though?
Okay. I got one. Next segment, I got one. Good. How about that?
I'm impressed.
And we'll get Ryan Clark's thoughts on it. Because I'm pretty sure he listens to some Teddy. Everybody listens to Teddy.
Everybody loves Teddy P.
Who doesn't love Teddy P?
Underrated.
Boys, we got some feuds taking place in the world of sports. And this first one, not very surprising. Ryan Day versus Jim Harbaugh. Michigan versus Ohio State. Apparently in a conference call that I guess involved all the Big Ten coaches. Jim Harbaugh just interrupts Ryan Day in the middle of him talking and accused the Buckeyes of breaking rules regarding on-field instruction. So basically, I guess there's this photo out there that showed Buckeyes assistant coach Al Washington working with Ohio State's linebackers, and NCAA rules don't allow that to happen until I think today. I think today's the first day you can have on-field instruction. And apparently Ryan Day responded with, "How about I worry about my team and you worry about yours?" Which Ohio State bending the rules is probably not all that surprising, but I'm just so fed up with Jim Harbaugh. I think he's like the most overrated coach in the history of football.
Ooh.
So this stuff right here is just funny to me because he can't beat anybody on the field, but let's just take shots at everybody at conference calls. It's fun.
Yeah, so Dave Biddle, Bucknuts.com, reported this. And, apparently Harbaugh questioned the on-field coaching. Day said, worry about your own team, so a little snippy. And then it was reported that Day said to his team, let's hang 100 on them.
Yeah.
Let me get the exact quote. You know, mercy rule, let's hang 100 on the Wolverines. The thing about this is, first of all, it's just great to have any kind of college football story that isn't like, will they play?
Will they play?
I mean, that's the story, you know, but it's fun to get a little bit of actual football trash talk or whatever. I'm not quite with you on Harbaugh. I think he's a good coach. He's improved the program. I saw what Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke did up close with that program, which is a program that there's no excuse for not winning at. So, I mean, he's greatly improved him from
that's
there.
That's fine, but everybody but he's views also, him as a top five coach of college football,
no,
and he's not.
No, he was vastly overrated. I mean, look, you know, my buddy Dan Wolkin, people get rip on poor Dan all the time. Dan does a really good job for USA Today. I think he said, like, Harbaugh win a natty in, like, 3 years. Like, come on. I mean, but that was commonplace when he was hired.
Yeah.
Like, he's just this above everyone else kind of coach. He's a really good coach. He's 0-5 against Ohio State. I just wouldn't, if I were him, like, I wouldn't tick off Ohio State right now. You know? I don't think there's a benefit to that. If this season does happen, it's going to be just so weird because they're playing in October. So one more reason to hope the season does happen.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Even though we're supposed to be rooting against sports, we would like to see that game.
I can't stand either one of those teams, but I really, for some reason, I just don't like Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, so a lot of people feel that way.
I find myself rooting for Ohio State in those games.
I think honestly the thing with Harbaugh is, and obviously Feinbaum takes, you know, drops bombs on him all the time, but I just think a lot of it does have to do with the reaction to the hire at Michigan and people going way overboard with what that would mean, you know? So that's not his fault.
Sure.
Now, he's a strange guy.
Yeah, he is.
Like his brother, like John Harbaugh is way more likable.
Yes.
Jim's just, I don't know.
He's built different.
And then stuff like this, I don't know. I guess
coming out of nowhere. Like, okay.
I mean, I guess if you have a problem, it's an interesting idea to bring it up on this conference call. When certainly they're talking about COVID stuff and all these things with the season, and he decides to pipe in with that during that. You'd think, why don't you just call the league if you have a problem and have them look into it.
Apparently there's another feud that we need to be made aware of that Munson has found between Ozzie Guillen and Nick Swisher. Munson, enlighten us.
Yeah, so, and I need you guys to search this video. Don't listen to the audio, obviously. Joe, turn your audio down on your computer. but I need you to
I thought you meant in my headphone. Like, I want to hear this.
No.
So, I got my computer off. Don't worry.
I want you guys to be able to watch the visual as I play this audio. So, okay. Apparently, on the White Sox TV network, that Ozzie was talking about basically who he hated more between Carlos Gomez and Nick Swisher. Which, I don't know how this conversation even started of, hey, do you hate Carlos Gomez more or do you hate Nick Swisher more? So, as I play this audio, I just want you to look at his facial expressions because this dude is dead serious about not liking Nick Swisher. Okay. I've never heard hatred for Nick Swisher before. This is true hatred. So, do you guys have the video ready?
I've got it. I'm ready to go.
Joe, do you have the video ready?
Okay. All right. Okay, I'm going where for this?
Joe, just go to Twitter, Joe.
Yeah,
just
go to Twitter.
Okay, so just go to Twitter and like search up Ozzie Guillen?
Yes. It's going to be the first thing that pops up because, yeah, it was that funny. It's great, though.
So we're trying to actually sync this up.
Yes.
With the audio you're playing.
I'm going to hit play.
It can be hard.
I'm going to hit play.
Okay. Just let me know when because I've got it ready to go.
So I see something where it looks like he's standing or, okay, he's sitting there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's Ozzie talking about Nick Swisher.
All right.
Oh my God, Nick! Nobody can compare that with Nick Swisher. I hate Nick Swisher with my heart.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. You want to get into that a little more, or no?
No, not really. But I think he hit me back. That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I can't.
You guys just didn't get along. Didn't work out.
No. I know. I never talked to him. I was managing him, but I don't like the way his attitude was all fake.
Yeah.
And I don't like fake people.
All right. So he was only in with the White Sox for 1 year and then he moved on.
It was 1 year too long.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he thought he was joking. He's not joking. He's dead serious.
He's not joking, which was funny because then the host was like, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Can I be mad at the host? That could have been amazing. He's trying to, okay, well, he was gone.
Okay.
Let him go. He had more to say.
He did. I would have just let him fire off.
NBC Sports Chicago. Maybe they're affiliated with the White Sox. They didn't want all that. I thought it was awesome.
No, it was great. And Ozzie Guillen is – I love Ozzie Guillen. He needs to be in the game.
Gotta be mic'd up at all times.
I hated those White Sox teams and him at the time, you know. But, my gosh, he's just the most – I mean, again.
I hated Nick Swisher.
But, I mean
– I think he hated me too.
Okay. I mean, honestly, is there anybody in baseball who – I mean, Nick Swisher.
I mean, come on.
Easy guy to dislike.
Remember A.J. Pierzynski?
I hated him with my heart. No, actually, the number one, man.
Pierzynski?
Pierzynski. Oh. Yeah. I hated him with my heart. What do you say, with all my heart?
With all my heart.
Not
even just like, I dislike this guy a little bit. With all the heart that's in my body, all of it is just hatred towards Nick Swisher.
And the host's like, well, you just didn't get along. No, man. No, I hated him. Let's get it right here. I hated his guts. He's gone now. Okay. No, let him go.
It was 1 year. Well, yeah, it was 1 year too long.
And then, okay. Just very uncomfortable.
Okay. If you've got a resource like Ozzie Guillen sitting there at the desk with you, you let him go.
Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, seriously, like, what if, like, you know, inside the NBA, Ernie's like, Chuck.
Okay.
Sorry, Chuck. I don't. That's calm down.
No,
now.
No. I want to.
You and Shaq. Come on. Come on, guys. We don't want any of this. This isn't good TV.
Yeah. He lets him. Usually he'll try to like. All right, guys. You gotta go to break. You guys fought for like 8 minutes.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to stop it. Yeah.
Like, hey, Chuck. I'll beat you up. You ain't gonna beat me up. No, you terrible. Yeah, I'll beat you up, Chuck. You don't want me beat. I'll fight you, Chuck. Oh, you ain't gonna fight me. You fat. You can't. And then Ernie's
I'd
like,
watch
all right,
15
all
minutes. Okay.
And Ernie's like, all right.
It always goes back to the championships. You're just mad because you don't have four rings. There you go.
Hey, peep this shot. Look at my fingers.
And so Ernie stops it because he has to go to commercial. Okay, fine. Yeah, you have to do that. This guy is misusing Ozzie Guillen badly. We need an investigation.
Speaking of, I've got to stop us right now because we got to go to commercial.
See, that,
Ryan
there
Clark
got to do it
on the other side. Covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Athletic. Wrote a great piece on Jacob Slavin, a Carolina Hurricanes defenseman. We'll talk to him next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, the beautiful dulcet tones of Teddy P coming back in here. Morning Drive,
like
Robbie
that,
Stanley,
Joe.
Alongside Joe Rexrode.
So, I mean, Teron's like, oh, it's just like Teddy Pendergrass. Listen to that voice. If that's true.
If he sounds like that.
Then Teron needs to get into some duet situations with his daughter.
No question.
Teddy Pendergrass, very underrated.
That's some pipes right there. No question about it. Well, it's a pleasure to bring on our next guest, our good friend Ryan Clark from The Athletic, who covers the Colorado Avalanche and does a wonderful job out there. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I guess where you get going, it's a weird story. So this is the first time I'm actually ever speaking to Joe Rexroad, but we both lived in Lansing for 2 years at the same time.
Oh, man.
At the Lansing State Journal.
Really?
And at that time, I was a news reporter. And so, like, I talked to his wife, Katie, for a story because she was in public relations. And everyone I knew who was there was like, oh, so you want to be a sports writer? And it's like, no, I am. I just took this job because my now wife was covering government, and we moved, and it's like you had to do something. And they're like, you should talk to Joe Rexroad. He's the Wizard of Oz. And, like, I never met the wizard, but, like, here I am talking to him now, and we're coworkers. So, yeah, my wife, who's a Michigan State grad, said, say something nice about the Peanut Barrel, Pizza House, and the dairy store.
You should see his face right now, Ryan.
No,
you've just perplexed him. It's the wizard in all its glory right here.
So wait, you were at the Lansing State Journal?
Yeah, so what it was is we were in Fargo covering, like, I was covering junior hockey and high school sports, and she was doing federal politics. And so the Lansing State Journal hired her to be part of the state government team that she'd also been kind of, she was with the LSJ, but, like, they had her do stuff with the Detroit Free Press as well. So, like, Kathy Gray, Paul Egan.
As well.
And so, like, yeah, I was in news, and I was like, you know, I can do more. And they're like, no, you just stay here. You just write 1+1 is 2, you people-minded man, and you'll never be in sports. And now here I am, and it's just like, oh, well, this is kind of strange now.
I feel terrible like that I didn't know this. That's amazing, and I'm really glad you brought on the Peanut Barrel too. Good call on that.
I mean,
wow.
I went once with Kristen, and I don't know if you know Omar Safarja at the State News.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we all went for lunch once, and they were just like, "This is the wonder of Michigan State," and I'm just like, "Look, between the Peanut Barrel, Grand River Ave, like the dairy store, your surplus store." Like your museum that looks like a spaceship that was in Batman versus like Michigan State, like we get it. You got a cyclotron too. You're the greatest place on earth. Like, we get it.
I don't know how it is in the world of sports. There's always like a Michigan State or Michigan connection everywhere. It's unbelievable. Like every
it's so strange.
Our company has a lot of Michigan and Michigan State. Yes, yeah. Yes. Wow.
More you learn. That's awesome. Well, Ryan, you wrote a wonderful piece on The Athletic about Carolina defenseman Jacob Slavin, his wife Kylie, and their adopted daughter Emerson. And it was, for those who haven't read it yet, go check it out. It's a wonderful piece about, you know, the Slavins adopting a daughter who's black and kind of growing up and learning about the different challenges that have come with that. How did this piece come about? And what was kind of the main focus point of the piece that you wanted to get across?
Sure. Well, I mean, the story itself is strange because in some ways it was weeks in the making, but in another way it was more than a year in development. So what it was Jacob is from Erie, which is a northern Denver suburb. He was hosting a hockey camp at the University of Colorado last summer. Got a chance to go out there, meet him, Kylie, his family, which all of them play hockey. And we were there and I saw them with Emerson and just, you know, you observe and you're just like, huh, like someday I'd love to write about this. And then here you are a little bit more than a year later. There's a national, well, really international conversation about race. And Jacob goes to Instagram and says what he says about, look, I hate that it took having a black daughter for me to realize, like, these are the challenges, you know, black people go through. And so reached out and said, hey, how would you feel about doing this story? And we said, sure. So it was going to run actually in early June, but then, you know, we had some editors look at the story and go, no, like this can run in its current form, but like you can do so much more with this. And so, yeah, it was just sitting down with the Slavins and talking to them remotely and just planning things while handling other stuff with the NHL. And yeah, with that story, it was just trying to get their, what they've experienced across in the sense of just, you know, this is what it's been like for them to not only raise this daughter, but what have they learned about adoption race, racism, systemic racism, but also it's that challenge too of just, you're trying to tell this story, but you're also being mindful as they are, and they were completely mindful of like, nuances everything, because like to some people this might look like a story of, okay, it's this family growing in a variety of different ways. Some people might look at it as a white savior story. Some people might look at it as something entirely different. So when you put something like this together, it's just about handling it with care, and you hope that it hits the mark. So that's really kind of the ins and outs of it all.
Yeah, and it really did hit the mark. Anyone who hasn't read it, please check it out at theathletic.com. And I think it's – I mean, the interesting thing to me, Ryan, is sort of their awakening, you know, through Emerson and maybe understanding some things that they hadn't thought about before. I mean, that and your lead to the story brings that right out. But it's just, you know, some things that maybe, you know, kind-hearted people – you know, don't mean to miss these things or not understand them, but it takes at times something like this to open their eyes.
I mean, it does. And, you know, one of the examples was Jacob Slavin saying, hey, when I was a student at Colorado College, there was a protest for Mike Brown because Ferguson had just happened. And he's like, I walked by it, not really thinking much of it. But he's like, looking back, he's like, how did you not realize it? How did you not make the effort to sit there and talk about it? But, you know, the thing is this, like, that's a question that, frankly, a lot of people have probably been asking themselves since George Floyd happened is, okay, why did it take this moment for the conversation to happen when you had Mike Brown and Tamir Rice and Sandra Bland and Trayvon Martin, and the list just kind of goes on and on. And so that was just it. It's like, you know, you read a story like this, and you know, it's not one of those things where if you're a white couple adopting a black child, you're going to have all the answers. Like, it doesn't matter what your race is. Like, you're a parent, whether you adopt a child or have one naturally. Like, no one's going to have all the answers right away. And with this story, it was just kind of showing, like, yes, it's one thing to raise a child. It's one thing to raise a child of a different race, knowing that there are going to be challenges that child faces that, yes, someday you have to prepare them for, but first – you've got to learn about this experience while fully understanding you will never, ever really know that experience yourself in terms of an overall capacity.
Ryan Clark on the line with us from The Athletic. And Ryan, look, you know, I'm a sports writer. Joe's a sports writer. We've written hundreds and hundreds of stories. But every now and then you come across one like you've just written that you know putting it together that it's going to be different. It's going to be impactful. What's it like piecing together a story like that that you know is going to be really impactful for those who read it?
You don't really think about it like that. Just, you want to make sure that when you're putting a story like that together, that you're telling the most accurate depiction of what's going on, that you make sure certain words are used to kind of get the point across, because you two both know better than anyone. You know, one word can make an entire difference, and it can really dictate the tone of a story. But you don't really try to sit there and think about, like, impact, because you just never know how people are going to perceive things. So I'll say it's going to be quiet, but, like, I had a professor at the University of Maine where I did undergrad who said, look, you can show a photo of the ocean to 1,000 people, and one person's going to view it differently than everybody else. And that's something you have to keep in mind. It's no matter what you write and all the intent in the world, like, you just never know how people are going to view things.
Ryan, I used your story yesterday as an example of a discussion we were having about media access in the NHL, and this is certainly not a new discussion, but the discussion of, I believe, especially since coming here and covering the Predators, that the NHL needs to do a lot better job of opening things up, of, you know, encouraging and fostering more human stories like this. We talked about, you know, sort of the NHL thing of, you know, don't put yourself ahead of the team and that. You know, that's a thing in the NHL. But also I think the league can do a lot better job even just having, excuse me, open access after games that the other major sports in this country have. And from what I can gather, most NHL teams do not have. Where do you come down on this? I mean, how do you think the league is doing in that way? Are you seeing things change? Obviously, you just told an incredible human story in this league, but I think a lot more of them could be told.
There's two ways to answer that. One, I think it's always easy if you're the kind of superstar who has your name in life at the local Nashville McDonald's about predictions you make. So I just wanted to throw that out there. No reason at all. But no, to be serious, it all depends, I think, on who you ask. Because, like, if you're coming from college football where those are restrictive environments and you come to the NHL, it feels like a galaxy of difference because you actually, before COVID, you were getting locker room time with players. You have a chance to exchange numbers, develop sources that way. And not only that, but at the same time, like, you get a chance to know these people. Whereas if now that you're in a COVID environment, it's so difficult to kind of assess because on one hand, it really does go back to what you've experienced. So, like, if you've covered something like college football, while this is different, there are some similarities in the sense of how you think stories, how you prepare for stories, what questions to ask, what works on this day, what's something you can kind of flesh out over time, what's something that you have to maybe look at some more numbers to kind of fully analyze before writing a story. But in the sense of just the personalities, you know, that's always kind of been the big question with the NHL is just what is it about this league that prevents it from being maybe as more open or personal as other leagues? And again, it all depends on who you ask, because covering the Colorado Avalanche, for example, you know, you heard from people when you take over the beat, like, hey, look, it's a really interesting team. They're on the rise. No one really knows a lot about them, so good luck with that. But, you know, just being in a dressing room like this, yes, it's talking to players about hockey, but at the same time, it's you get to know them away from that, and that goes back to another larger that we won't get into discussion about just how do you view athletes? Do you view them as human beings, or do you view them as commodities? And so, like, let's just take the Avs, for example. Last season, I did a story about how, you know, look, more than 50% of the players on the team were born in a place where English wasn't the first language. And so as someone who's, I guess you could say, bi, nearly trilingual, so I'm more fluent in Spanish, but when I was in high school, I took Russian, and I was nearly fluent, but I don't speak it as much as you used to. Like, you understand what it's like to learn and speak a foreign language. So, like, it's talking to all these guys about, hey, do you still dream in Russian? Do you dream in Swedish? It's talking to Nikita Zadorov and saying, what was it like learning the English language where, like, in phonetics, in English, like, you look at the letter P, it's a P. In Russian, because it's Cyrillic, what looks like a P to you is actually an R to them. Like, if you see the word Pakshinar with a backwards R, you're like, what's that? But if you speak Russian, you're like, oh, that's just Russia and Russian. So, like, it's just things like that that, like, sometimes as a writer, you might have to take the extra effort. And it works, but also, like, every dressing room is different.
No question about it. Ryan Clark from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Ryan, we really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Fantastic story on The Athletic. If you haven't checked that out, make sure you do. Ryan, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We got to talk some East Lansing soon, Ryan. I'll slack you.
Oh.
I'll slack you.
Oh, please do. Yeah, if you want to talk about Big John having the best steak and cheese you've ever had, like,
oh,
that's perfectly fine with
you. You are right with mushrooms. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care.
Ryan Clark from The Athletic has been our guest. When we come back, we'll dive back into the Preds. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
So what are the conversations like as you guys do your evaluation from where you sit? Do you collaborate much with them, or is it at this time, is it more in their hands?
A little bit of a combination. I mean, we met as a group last night after the game back at the hotel, and we went over everything from what we saw upstairs. And John's always good at that, asking us, "What did you see from upstairs?" And, you know, put forward our thoughts and suggestions. I spoke with John later last night before we went to bed, just to see what after they had reviewed the game and watched it, whether we had any different thoughts or anything that was brought up in our meeting. That you felt it would be worthwhile to forward to the players or any changes to make. I met with him this morning again just to go over his thought process. So, you know, we're in total communication, and I think everybody's getting to have their input. But, you know, I mean, to me, the coach has got to play who he thinks is going to get us that win on Friday. So, I mean, he has the green light for me to make any changes, and I'm totally support him and what he wants to do.
That was Preds GM David Poile on with Darren Donick and Chase yesterday, talking about the green light John Hines has to make whatever lineup decisions he wants to make. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Retro. Joe, I think we knew that already in terms of John Hines being able to make the decisions he feels like is best. Do you think the decisions he has to make today in terms of what he's going to do with his lineup are difficult? Or given the way the Predators have played so far in this series, do you think it's more likely that he just says, you know what, I'm leaving this lineup as is. They've played well for the most part. Let's see if they can figure out, get a win in Game 4 today, and let's roll with the punches in Game 5.
I'm not totally sure on this, but I'm guessing Poile last night said you're going to start Connor Ingram in goal. You're benching Duchesne. Ellie Tolvanen's in the top six. And after that,
we're recalling Mike Fisher.
There you go. After that, the rest of the decisions are up to you, John. Good luck. Now, I think that we'll see the same lineup. I'm not way confident in that, but I think that's what we'll see. I think we'll see UC Saros in goal. I think we'll see the same lines, the same defense pairings. There's just not an obvious move to make. The one guy in the forward group that we thought, you know, maybe could be shuttled in and out was Austin Watson, and he has justified the decision to play him to me. So I just don't see an obvious help to the second line anywhere else right now. They have to do more. And again, they have done more since game one in creating chances. They haven't registered. They haven't officially registered. So I think it's really a lot on them to do something. I don't see an obvious move. The most likely move here is in goal. And I still don't think that's very likely.
When you look at the lineup, if they do make changes, it's probably going to come at the expense of the second line. So that's Duchesne, Turris, and Granlund. What do you do, though? Like, what do you do to really change up the makeup of that line? Assuming that everybody's in the lineup that has been the last three games in terms of you're not pulling anybody that's been a healthy scratch and placing them in, like, what do you do? Like, do you move Colton Sissons to the wing and hope he adds more of, like, that crash and bang and get the rebound type of element to the line and then move, I guess, either Turris or Duchesne down? Like, I don't do that. I think Turris has probably been playing the best out of the three on that line.
Agree.
So, and I don't think Matt Duchesne is going to serve a whole bunch of a purpose on the fourth line with Watson and Yarncroak. No disrespect to those guys, but they're not the type of players that Duchesne needs to be playing with. So you look around kind of searching for moves. There's not a ton out there. I mean, I had somebody throw out yesterday, maybe bring in Trennan, put him on the second line, and that you're talking about crash and bang, a bigger body. He certainly adds that.
For who?
That's the question. Like, I don't know. And is he ready for second line duties? Probably not. I think he had a good regular season with the Predators. Certainly a revelation at times, the way he played. I don't know if he's ready for that. So the more I think about it, the more I think the Preds, probably the most likely option is they just leave things alone today and roll at it again and hope that Duchesne and Turris and Granlund can manufacture enough offense and respond to what's been a tough series for them so far.
You think Chris Martel's awake now?
Probably so.
I mean, I've seen a lot of pictures of bourbon from him.
Well, so he could be out then. I don't know.
Well, I hope he's up because I want to know for him or anyone who actually thinks you should bench Duchesne, then who would – like what would that look like if you bench Duchesne? And I'm not saying this in any sort of reality. Of course that's not happening. But I just – like what would you do if you did that?
Yeah, like who are you bringing in?
Yeah.
Colin Blackwell? That's fine, but like
– I mean, you're going –
what's going to happen there?
Yeah, you're going dramatic maybe. Like I mean, I was just joking about Tolvanen. You know,
yeah.
You center it with Turris and you bring in Tolvanen. I don't know. You've got to.
Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, like that. Those guys can do it. It's not like we've been watching three games where they're just completely silenced.
Right.
It's just that, and you are comparing it some to camp when, like you said earlier in the show, Robbie, no one was hitting them during that portion of preparation for the playoffs, but they looked really good together. They have a nice feel for each other, skill, all that. They can do more. They haven't been completely just shut down, but they just can do more. And of course, you have to score.
It's got to produce. That's what
it is. You have to win.
Yeah, it's all about production. Like you get paid that line together. I think is close to $20 million. 19.75, I think is what we came up with yesterday per year. Put the puck in the back of the net. That's what you get paid to do. That's what you have to do this time of year. Like, I'm generally a guy that I like to focus in on process, the way teams are playing, what that means over the long haul. That's great in the regular season. You can do that. I think you should do that in the regular season. It doesn't mean a whole lot in these playoff series. I mean, I think the Preds, other than the first period of game one and then moments of the third period in game three, have by far been the better team in this series, and yet they trail 2-1. That's just what hockey is sometimes.
You know, that $19.75 million, I'm just going to tell you, that may be stolen, you know, as a for a use in a column at some point. So let's look at the line that's absolutely dominating, 10-2-5. So the line that is the best line by far in the series is at 18-2-5.
Yep.
So $1.5 million less.
I mean, come on.
I mean, you know.
Well, that just goes to show how good of a deal Victor Arvidsson's contract is. But
that's a good point. Yeah. And Forsberg's got a few years left here.
Yeah.
He's a good deal, too.
He is
Forsberg
too.
At six is a good deal.
No question about it. When we come back, David Ubben from The Athletic covers the Tennessee Volunteers. He'll join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.